Blog Talk Radio.
New.
Hey, good evening, podcast audience. This is Ken Hodge from Hodge to Hodge on Blog Talk Radio with our Tuesday night Kenny and Rob Injury Compensation Podcast. Tonight, we're going to be joined in a few minutes by Chris and Jeannie from the Federal Injury Centers. And again, everybody knows them from their Wednesday night awesome Injury Compensation Podcast. I keep calling it a podcast, but it's a Facebook show they do Wednesday night. But until they come on, let's talk injury comp. And I've got my right hand with me tonight. How you doing, Brother Frost?
I'm doing pretty well, Ken. Hello, everyone.
Hey, hello. Hey, what's going on, Brother Frank?
All right, I'm doing good. I just ain't heard anything.
Huh?
I haven't heard anything about my claim.
Okay, and again, as soon as we get again, my resident experts on, they'll be able to help us break that down as to why and what moves we need to take in order to get that justified or ratified. And one of the things that I want to say off the top is, what day did you file your claim?
About a month ago now, or close to it. I got the paperwork. I can find out, though.
Okay.
We're going to look it up here. I'm going to let you know for... It's been
okay.
A long time.
Hey, good evening, caller. How you doing?
Hey, good. It's Chris.
Hey, okay. This is Chris Helms.
Hey, that's all right. I've had my name spelled a number of different ways over the years.
Hey, it's Frank, I'm gonna get right back to you, Frank. I just tell Jeannie I went back on and corrected it, though. But, okay, you know what? Glad to have you with us, Chris. And as always, let me introduce to some and present to others. Hey, every once in a while, we get blessed with having Chris or Jeannie from the Federal Injury Centers join the podcast. And again, the knowledge that they possess and that they share with all federal employees, it's just awesome. I don't know any other way to state this. So, Frank, I'm going to start with you. Your question was, you haven't heard anything on your claim?
No, I haven't. March the 15th, Ken.
So March the 15th.
Yeah.
And it was a CA. And it was a CA2, correct?
CA2, right. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not 30 days yet. But, Chris, once that claim is filed, how soon should they hear something back?
Well, they typically are not going to hear anything back within less than 6 weeks. Let me tell you why. So you fill it out with the supervisor. They have 10 days to turn into DOL, not including Sundays. And from then, DOL makes a decision with or without the doctor's medical narrative. If it's with the medical narrative, it's much faster. But if the doctor delays sending in a narrative, it's much slower. And then ultimately the decision comes back denied because there's not enough medical information to prove that there's an injury. But at the last time DOL did a self-audit was 2015, and they found that it took an average of 45 days, which is 6 weeks, to make a decision. That's whether it's approved or denied. So anything that happened mid-March, we're still not up against the 6 weeks yet. Yeah, you know, we're barely like 4 weeks in, maybe three.
Did that answer your question, Brother Frank?
February 26th. I gave you guys the wrong date.
This one's a CA2. So if it's in February, then we're coming up on 6 weeks. But 6 weeks was an average, and averages include things that are much further out, too.
So it's been a good 6 weeks.
Okay, well, one of the things that I would recommend, and Chris, co-sign if you would, that you can contact the Department of Labor and find out the status of your claim.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. In fact, I was actually going to say, call your claims examiner every day if that's what it takes.
And
how would I know who the examiner is?
Yeah, so if you just go to Google and search
is that Linda?
Search OWCP district offices and then just choose the your state. There's a state map. It'll give you a phone number.
Hey, Frank, okay, I'll work that out for you.
Linda Rosa? Ken? False?
I'm not sure which one it is, but I'll Google OWCP, go to district offices, and I don't know if they break them down by last names or not, but I'll find out who your caseworker is and send you a email or a phone number, and then let's start calling them because – and this is another reason that I've definitely invited Chris on tonight. We'll get to this in a second, but one of my concerns is how do we know the post office even submitted your claim?
Yeah,
you
so
see, because
when you fill out your CA-2, they have a notice of receipt, and so you're supposed
right.
to get a copy of that back. So
we
that you
have that.
You did your part.
I wasn't even aware of that.
When you turned in your CA-2, he didn't sign the back page and give it back to you?
No, I faxed it to her.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll use your – okay. What we'll do is I'll try to track it from your fax – because already, from what it sounds like, what I'm hearing right now is your CA-2 is probably still sitting on that fax machine or on some supervisor's desk because they realized that they didn't give you your copy back. So
no, they
understand that they just manipulated your timeline.
Yes.
But we can fix that, though. Yeah, we can fix that.
I'm pretty sure I told Lisa, I texted her, and she did say she got that CA-2 form, but I heard nothing else from her.
Okay, that, like I said, this is when we'll go to the Department of Labor and find out the status of your form.
Right. So let me just give some advice on this, if you don't mind. So what you want to do is when you do that Google search, it's going to come up to a U.S. map. You click on your
right.
state. And it'll tell you the phone number to the district office. You call that phone number and
okay.
you give them, you know, your personal information, like your social, if you don't have a 9-digit case number yet. And they'll tell you if they have anything filed for you. And if not, that means the supervisor definitely did not send it in. And at minimum, you have a grievance to file on that.
Oh, okay. Now, who you say call?
I haven't written down, Frank. It's OWSC.
Okay.
Yeah, but I got you, brother. Right. Yeah, we walked together on this.
All right, buddy.
Hey, but you know what? I got a question for Chris, and this is one of the reasons I definitely reached out to him to come on tonight. And it may seem like a very simple question, but let's see. Once an employee
okay.
files a CA form, how is management notified that his claim has been accepted or rejected? And let me tell you why I asked that question, because – If the employee if the claimant don't know that their claim has been accepted and management has them out of work, once management is notified, are they not responsible for bringing that person back to work now? That was my reason for asking how do we know when management is notified that a claim is accepted?
Yeah, so I actually looked that up. And because nobody's ever asked that question. So I spent a significant amount of time reading through the regulations. And it was a massive rabbit hole that ended in nothing. So I have no idea how they do it, but I know they do it in writing. And so just like they send a letter to the, you know, to the injured person saying
right.
your claim is accepted or denied, they also send a letter out to the agency notifying them on the status of the claim. So it must be in writing by letter, just like they notified the patient or the injured employee.
Okay, and like I said, it was just something that while doing some research last week, and again, I'm pretty sure there is some notification, but I didn't understand how it worked, and I was curious as to how it worked. And my curiosity rose from if an employee is out of work, let's say, for example, let's use hypothetical situation. Let's say I work in Columbus and I'm a maintenance person. You put me out of work on some nonsense job limitations. I file a CA-1 or CA-2. My claim is now accepted as an on-the-job injury, which dramatically changes how you work me or your desire to bring me to work. So my question is, once the agency has that, do they automatically contact the employee and say, listen, because it's now an on-the-job injury, we're forced to find work for you, or does the agency just let it go by the wayside and say, well, the employee never informed me? That was my real reason for asking that question.
So it's the employee's responsibility to inform them using a CA-17. So, you know, they receive notice from the from DOL saying your claim is accepted, but restrictions are done by the doctor using a duty status report. And so once the claim is accepted, they turn in that CA-17, and hopefully they did that already. Then the employer, the agency, is, has a responsibility now to do one of two things. Either A, work with their restrictions, or B, I see this all the time, say, sorry, we don't have anything for you. Send the person home, and the person begins getting paid using a CA-7. Now, Department of Labor, the claims examiners and the case managers don't like that very much. And so when a person's sitting at home, not being in any way productive but getting paid, generally DOL will step in to the supervisor and say, hey, you know, fix this. Find them some work. And the management's obligated to make every effort to find limited duty work.
Yes,
sometimes
they are.
They don't. Sometimes they don't. So that means the person's got to sit at home and get paid to sit at home.
Yeah, can I interject something here?
Sure, go ahead.
All right. One of the stipulations is it has to be within 50 miles of your work location, your regular work location. In other words, if we work here in Columbus, Dayton is like 55 miles away. They cannot send you to Dayton to work. It has to be within 50.
Do you have that in writing anyplace? Because I have a situation where there's a station in Florida, and they send everybody like 56 miles away. It definitely seems like punishment to me.
Oh yes.
I don't have it in writing. That is what I was told when I was denied the right to come back to work. There was no work within 50 miles.
Yeah, I haven't seen that either, but I've been looking for it because 56 miles seems like punishment to me.
Yes.
You're right, especially if I got hurt at work. Now, if I got hurt off work, that seemed like a very nice gesture in the post office part to find me work. But if I got hurt at work, yeah, that nice gesture, that don't fly with me. Oh, you obligated to find work for me now.
Right, exactly. Exactly right.
So once again, if the post office sends you home because, and again, in this case here, you can't carry a vacuum cleaner, so you can't do 1% of your job. So they send you home. Now that 1% is encompassed in an on-the-job injury. Do they still have a right to keep you home?
Well, you know, they're going to keep you home as long as you don't fight back. And, you know, fight back, thankfully, those that are, you know, union members have some mechanism for fighting back, pushing back. But they're going to as long as you let them do it. But they're also going to as long as DOL lets them do it. But as soon as you start turning in biweekly claims for compensation, showing 100% off work, DOL is going to say, hey, what the heck's going on here? We received a CA-17 from a doctor saying you could work at a limited duty. What's going on? And so, you know, you start sending in your CA-7s every couple of weeks, and a claims examiner realizes they're paying bills, they're paying your salary for you to sit at home, and they can compare that to the CA-17 because the doctor sent that in where, that says that you could work limited duty. And claims examiners don't like that either. And so they'll typically be motivated to push back on that as well. But
excuse me.
I see this missing all the time. When management sends you home, even though the doctor sent you to work, be sure you get that in writing that the management is sending you home, because you want to attach that to your CA-7s as well.
Yeah, Robert, go ahead.
All right, I've just found something. Its official duty station is defined in number 5, CFR 550.112. Parentheses J, and then there's another number 2, and it says an agency may prescribe a mileage radius of not greater than 50 miles to determine whether an employee's travel is within or outside the limits of the employee's official duty station for determining of entitlement to overtime travel pay. And that seems to be the same thing they're using for limited duty personnel.
So that's 20 CFR.
That's not exactly it, but.
What is that again? So, the 20 CFR, what's the rest of the number?
It's number the number 5, CFR 550, decimal 112, and then the letter J in parentheses. And then there's another one that is 551.422 with the letter D as in dog in parentheses.
I'm going to research that.
So, Rob, you
Hey,
Rob, so you seem to think that the post office is using that, even though it talks about overtime entitlement, just like they're using you have to file a CA-1 in 30 days, but they forget to tell you that within after 30 days, the only thing you lose is your COP. You mean something along those lines?
Yes, I believe that's what it looks like.
Okay. Yeah, because, you know, those are – that's an interesting question because most folks know if you work for the Postal Service, a lot of times, rather than just say they don't care, I'm going to try to be politically correct and say they don't know. But if you know and it's affecting you, then you have to make sure that you research these rules and regulations so that you understand what is directly affecting you and hold the agency accountable to do what it is they are mandated to do.
Yeah, no kidding. And let me tell you something about that CFR, the Code of Federal Regulations. That thing is massive. There's so much to it. And, you know, I bury myself in it from time to time. And I hadn't heard of this particular regulation that you just told me about. It's easy to see how a federal employee can be snowed under by management because they don't know what's against the rules or not. And so that was a really good find. I'm going to do some research on it and make that part of my training. That's really good work.
That's that guy, Robert Frost. That's what he does.
Man,
that's,
seriously.
That's, I mean,
that's
really,
good.
That's
lucky.
You know? Okay, you get lucky a lot, Rob. But, and you know, that's one of those things, like I said to the podcast audience, we don't do this for any other reason other than trying to help you understand your rights and your benefits, and in this case, under injury compensation. There's a lot of time spent studying, researching, so that we can bring you quality answers so you understand that there is someone out there, as Chris said, there is a mechanism out there that's designed to help you. All you have to do is reach out and work within the guidelines that we're trying to provide you with.
Yeah.
So we got any more before we go off into another topic? Are there any more questions while we have Mr. Helms on the phone with us tonight?
Nope.
Hey, well,
I've
again,
got one.
Talk to me.
All right. I've been working with our injured people, at least the ones that have come to me. And I have a question about the HIPAA. Am I allowed to keep their files locked up if they give me copies of information without having them sign some kind of document saying I'm authorized?
I think it's in your best interest to have them sign a document giving you authorization.
Okay,
I would.
That's what I thought.
For your own personal protection. I just personally would.
Okay.
Do I need to format one for you, Rob, or are you good?
Might be better if you format it because you're more familiar with that type of document than I am.
All right. What we'll do then, we'll put together that. And again, because the last thing I would want, and again, sometimes the agency that we work for, they get a little frustrated because someone is helping employees do what they should be doing. And I don't want them to coerce an employee into saying that you're forcing anybody to give up medical records because that's a real touchy subject. So, yeah, I'll have that put together for you. And, again, it's just a document authorizing them to give you your records and authorizing you to maintain those records.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
The reason I brought it up is I did see something that came out of the eastern area stating that all medical records had to be turned over to the agency.
Well, again, they are turning the records over. We just have a copy of the record. But the agency has the record.
Right. Yes, but this particular email that I saw, it wasn't directed specifically at me. It was a general email. And it said specifically that no one else other than the agency is supposed to have copies of the records.
Well, anybody can have copies of records that the injured person allows to have copies. Like, let's say I'm an injured employee. I can literally go into a restaurant and pass out copies of my records with a note, with a release saying, here, have my records. It would be completely ridiculous, but they're my records. I can give them to whoever I want to give them to, even complete strangers who have nothing to do with it. So you're definitely covered. I would definitely get them to write a release, though.
Hey, Robert.
And then a backup question to that.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sorry. Now, I have the records locked up. I have a key, but I believe my manager also has a key. Now, my understanding is he's not supposed to have a key. Is that correct? Because he has nothing to do with those records.
Well, certainly the person's only releasing their records to you and not the manager, so I would safeguard those against anybody else seeing them that's not authorized to see them.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
I'll take care of that tomorrow.
I'm sure Fred will be more than willing to do the right thing. Whatever the right thing might be.
So.
Yeah, I do too. Hey, but, you know, so here we are talking injury compensation. I expected a few other people to call in who had ongoing concerns, but, you know, I'll reach out to them later. But when we file that, again, if once you file, and help me here, panel, once I file a CA-2, once that CA-2 is accepted by Department of Labor, in so many words, does that CA-2 now have the same benefits or functionality as a CA-1?
Yeah, it definitely does. It has the exact same benefits, minus, obviously, on a CA-1, you can potentially be eligible for a CA-16 and for COP. But for purposes of treatment and compensation, yes, it's the same, outside of COP.
Outside of COP. So if I have an accepted CA-2, I now have an on-the-job injury, which now means, again, management is a little more obligated to find work for me.
That's correct. You're, at that point, able to get medical attention of any kind that's medically indicated, covered by DOL. You're allowed to have time away from work paid for by OWCP. You're allowed to be reimbursed for medical expenses, for travel expenses, and there's a expectation that management's going to work with you and your doctor's restrictions so that you don't have to just sit at home when there's work you could be doing, in a restricted capacity.
Hey Chris, just on your
CA-1.
On your knowledge, and since you work in this every day, all day, are CA-2s being accepted at a pretty good rate right now?
Well, CA-2s are always harder to get accepted, especially by relatively untrained physicians. But the rules are really straightforward on how to get a claim accepted, regardless if it's a CA-1 or 2. And if the doctor is able to check all the boxes and connect all the dots, those claims get accepted. I do see them being a little more difficult than a CA-1 because, you know, a CA-1 is easier to prove that it actually happened. You can't see back pain or carpal tunnel pain.
And so
the doctor's got to do a better job at explaining how it was work-related.
Okay. All right. Yeah, because like I said, I've got since we started this podcast and since we made it known to people, in, especially in Columbus, Ohio, City 8, that you have injury comp people here trying to represent and help you out, that CA-2 seems to be popping up more and more often from employees getting hurt, not reporting injuries, and now it has gone from a little twinge in my back to I can barely stand up straight some days, but I don't know what to do because when it happened, I didn't tell anybody. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, let me tell you something in response to that. And this is something I've been I had an opportunity to speak on in, with the rural carriers in Wisconsin and again in Florida this last week and a half. And it's that, you know, most people, if I say, how long have you been employed here, they'll raise their hand and say, you know, greater than 20 years. And so my question is, are you younger today than you were 20 years ago? No. Okay. So what about like 70 pounds? Is it lighter today? Well, no, I mean, kind of it's heavier because you're weaker because you're 20 years older. So the job's getting harder. And, you know, if you ignore this, it's going to be worse for you. And next thing you know, you're considering disability. And so the number one reason claims don't get accepted is that they don't get attempted. So everyone's got to advocate for themselves and say, hey, I know there's a CA2. I know I have 3 years from the date I knew this was work-related to report it. So it's not too late. Let's report this thing. Protect yourself, you know, at all costs. And so the best way to protect yourself is to report the injury and file the CA2.
That's a piece of tool. Can I ask another question here?
Go ahead, Rob. You got the mic?
You bet.
All right. I don't want to sound like a greedy, I won't use any expletives, but,
but you are.
I am. but I am. somebody who's filing a delayed CA2. How could
what
they,
do you call delayed?
Especially
what do you call delayed?
For example, we'll say 2.5 years from the time of actual injury or however long management has put them off work with a CA17 but didn't file the injury report, okay? Because we've got a couple people that have been off for a long time. Management didn't file the report. They said, here, take a CA-17 to your doctor. We'll follow the restrictions. They didn't. They put the employee off work. Is that employee entitled to any back pay?
Well, once the claim's accepted, the employee will be entitled to all the benefits beginning on day one. So let's say that 2.5 year person got their claim accepted. They can go back to 2.5 years ago and get all of their benefits back, including time off, which after all your sick and annual leave is done, that becomes OLAP, right? Your leave without pay. And so you can go
yeah.
back and get that time back using a CA7. And so that's why it's never, ever give up, ever, never give up, because that's your money. It's your time, and go and get it with as much fury as you can, fight to get that. They make the window 3 years from the date you knew it was work-related, and one of the reasons is so you can go back and fight for yourself. So any time that they took you off, you have an opportunity to go get it back. And to me, that's all the motivation I would need. That's my money. So I'm going to go get it.
Did I answer your question, Rob?
It did. I hope it answered a couple of listeners' questions, too.
Yes, I'm sure they'll hear it tomorrow. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they'll hear it tomorrow morning. Hey, but listen, we're down to 1:30 on tonight's half-hour podcast, and I want to say thank you, Chris. It is always a pleasure for you to stop by Hodge to Hodge. And then let me tell the rest of the podcast, let me say this to the rest of the podcast audience. Tomorrow night, what time is your Facebook tomorrow night, Chris?
It's 9 Eastern, 8 Central.
And it's on Facebook, correct?
That's right. Go to Wednesday night OWCP chats on Facebook. Just go up into the search bar and search it. There is no other page that it's called anything close to Wednesday night OWCP chats, so you'll find it. And at 8 Central, 9 Eastern, you'll see it go live, and you'll be able to click on it and watch. And ask your questions
hey.
There. I answer as many questions as I can in real
yeah.
time in about an hour.
I was just getting ready to say, tonight, you just got your palate wet. by what Chris can and will do. So tomorrow night, 9 o'clock, check him out on Facebook. Again, awesome show. Again, I have my own podcast going on there, but I go back and forth because I listen to Chris and Jeannie, and it helps me prepare to talk to my members in 304. Hey, so I really thank everyone for coming out tonight. Thank you, Frank, for joining us. And as always,
all right.
My man Robert Frost. Everybody have a safe week, and we'll talk to you next week. Good night, everyone.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.